091018, Iowa Bank House Services, the bioengineer supplements.
Thank you, Your Honor, and please the court. This is an appeal from a summary judgment of invalidity based on the on-sale law. And what I would like to focus on are the different proofs and the different standards required when an allegation is made based on printed publication versus prior public sale or use.
Aren't you confusing combining three or four provisions? Seems to me, tell me where I'm wrong, that there are advertisements here which indicate that materials for the purpose stated in the claim with the components stated in the claim were on sale. Why doesn't that create a prima facie bar which wasn't refuted?
First of all, Your Honor, I think that there was refutation to the extent of fact questions. But there are two different types of alleged invalidating activities here that do need to be looked at under their proper standards. One of them is printed publication, where it is...
I'm asking about on sale. Why wasn't it on sale?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, the only alleged proofs of the on sale are the advertisements. There was no...
They speak for themselves.
They do.
State composition, they state on sale at fine stores and gyms, Astra catalog. And why doesn't that create a prima facie case? There was no, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was no refutation saying, well, our product doesn't contain these, the ad doesn't contain the ingredients that were in the patent. The purpose isn't the same. Seems to me the ad beat the claim.
And again, Your Honor, I'm sorry to keep coming back to the same point. But we do need to look at the ad's value as printed publications.
Once again, you're getting to another ground.
And then also the on sale aspect, which I will address. The question for on sale, and here's where I think the district court went into error, by citing cases that say a challenger does not need to prove enablement of an on sale. What the challenger certainly needs to prove is that all elements of the product or the method are found in the product that was allegedly sold or used in the public more than 1 year beforehand. The ads by themselves don't do that.
Don't you have recited in the ad keto acid and an amino acid that is divasive?
Absolutely. But that doesn't prove what was in any product that was actually on the shelf more than a year before the filing date and actually used. And maybe I can try to illustrate with an example.
Let me see if I understand what you're saying. You're sort of imposing the hearsay, saying that this is the only thing on the record and it can't have been used for the truth of the matter asserted, so that we can't draw conclusions with respect to the actual product on sale based simply on these advertisements.
In large part, absolutely, Your Honor. And again, this is summary judgment. We're not here talking about whether at the end of the day the defendants might be able to prove this up. But somebody who is trying to establish an on sale bar in the ordinary course will get discovery of what is the product, what are its characteristics, was it actually in the bottle, or was it not? And that cannot be saved simply by a statement in an advertisement. And the hypothetical that I was thinking of, the circumstance that I think illustrates the point, is if we have a printed publication that discloses a compound, it's drawn, it's shown, but it doesn't show how to make it, and it is, in fact, extraordinarily difficult to synthesize the compound.
But that relates to printed publication?
Yes, but then the next part I'm going to suggest, Your Honor, so that relates to printed publication. If that reference, dissertation, whatever, says we made the compound and experimented with it in lab rats. That is an insufficient proof of a public use. That does not show that...
Okay, once again, you're getting off on sale into public use. I agree public use raises different considerations, just as printed publication requires enablement. I'm talking about a prima facie case.
It would be the same point, Your Honor, if that reference were to say, and in fact, we sold 5 samples of this. And that's the only proof of it. There was no direct proof of what was sold, whether the compound shown on the page was...
That gets to the sale as opposed to a constant.
It gets to the identity aspect, Your Honor. It gets to the issue of, is there proof that what was supposedly in the bottle that was sold, used, shipped, really doesn't matter, actually is read on by the claims and is in anticipation. And that's not something that you can excuse proof of by saying that an on-sale bar doesn't have to be enabled. What I believe that gets to is a situation that if there's a compound that's been sold, used, offered for sale, any combination of one or the other of those, and that compound is extraordinarily difficult to synthesize, maybe it requires a trade secret to synthesize it, the fact that manufacture of that compound is not enabled by the material in the jar does not prevent the anticipation. But somebody who's relying on that material in the jar to prove invalidity has to establish identity. That they have to establish that what is claimed is actually in the jar. Or in the case of a method claim, that what was claimed was either actually practiced, or cases talk about the automatic and necessary result. And that's not something that's excused by saying, I don't need to prove enablement of an on-sale.
You have a controlling case supporting your position on sale.
What I do have, Your Honor, are the circumstances of the cases that talk about the excuse of proving enablement for on sale and what that means. I don't think there's any exact case that addresses the question of, or obviously it's the obvious, there's no case that exactly addresses can easy as by themselves prove on sale immediate claim.
Or are they only hearsay?
Well, I believe they are only hearsay.
There's no case on that. Is this a case of first impression on sale with respect to an ad that describes the composition and says it's on sale and tells you where to get it?
It might be in that I've not found one that's exactly on point. But when we look at cases, so there's the case involving the material Rigaseal, which was 3M, or there's the Loctite case that involves the devices to attach layers of masonry. In all those cases, the court, whether it was summary judgment or trial, looks at all the evidence and asks, is the evidence sufficient to prove an on-sale type activity more than 1 year before the filing date. And we know from a lot of cases that that is frequently held to a very high standard of proof. There's if it's a alleged public use or sale by someone other than the patentee, it's very often held to a corroboration requirement. This is not an easy way as an evidentiary matter to prove invalidity of a patent. And so,
before you run out of time, I just want to ask you about printed publication.
Yes, sir.
What specific information can you identify that was actually missing from the advertisements to conclude in it?
This gets to, there's two issues. I'll answer yours in a moment. One is, in fact, does it disclose all limitations within the four corners, which is, does it match the enhanced muscle performance or recovery from fatigue as construed by the district court. But as to the enablement question, Again, there's no claim that's made by the plaintiffs here that any and all products that contain the recited ingredients in any amount, in any dosage, in any use, will automatically result in the practice of the claim method. The whole infringement case here was hotly contested.
Your answer, just because we're limited in time, your answer is the absence of particular concentrations identified in the advertisement is essentially precluded. I guess the reason I'm having trouble with that answer is that I don't see anything in the claim and the specification where at least where the claim limits the invention to particular concentrations.
Well, and that, Your Honor, is why I was starting to say that we've never claimed or alleged that.
Right, so you can't use the absence of such information as the advertisement as a means of saying it's not enabled when the claim itself doesn't include.
No, I think in fact, Your Honor, the opposite. The claim does not need to enable, obviously, the specification needs to enable.
Right.
The claim is practicing carrying out the claim method. A hotly contested point in before the summary judgment was granted was whether we had sufficient proof that the defendant's products actually did that. They denied it. They denied that their products, even though they contain the recited amino acids and keto acids, actually resulted in the claimed method. And so the claimed method clearly requires, on the face of it, that it be carried out, that it be practiced, that the results occur. If it is not, this gets to the issue of is the preamble a claim limitation? And it is. Use of these compounds is in the prior art all over the face of the patent. In other situations, in medical situations, liver failure, etc. So there's no question that the claim is limited to practice of the claim method, making that happen in person.
And we can't infer from the advertisement that they didn't necessarily affect the affected muscle, the absence of muscle fatigue.
No, there's no evidence of that, Your Honor, and we can't infer. If we look at the specification here, for example, which is the double-blind study that was published and it's recited in the specification, they give 11 grams of this combination to the test subject. That's quite a lot. Now, there's no proof that there were 11 grams of that material in these prior art products, and it's certainly not disclosed on the face of the publication, on the advertisement. So if they were reciting on the face of these materials 11 grams of this combination, I'd have a problem. And it would be a difficult question to answer about would we not infer, because they're using the same materials and the same amount that are in your spec, that it necessarily results. But that's not the facts here.
I'm going to see your rebuttal.
Yes, Your Honor, thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm Philip Sigrist, representing the Apple BSM. Mr. Latham represents MRI. I think we divided it 10 minutes and 5 minutes. I wanted to touch first on Claim 8, the claim with the conjugated limitation in it, and then come back to some of these issues we were just talking about.
I'd like to hear what you have to say about the hearsay point.
Yes, Your Honor. On the hearsay point, the point is that these ads were published before the patent was filed. Everything that's in the claims is in these ads.
So now they hearsay.
No, because
what they're intending to prove, namely that product within the scope of the claims in the method was on sale.
Let me answer first whether they're hearsay about a previous publication, then I'll answer whether they're hearsay about on sale. First, they have, as you pointed out, all the elements of the claim. They have these exact chemical compounds. They say to take the compounds. They say that it makes you stronger. They say that it improves recuperation, that it improves recovery after exercise. But because the advertisement meets all the elements of the claim itself, then the advertisement is not hearsay. It's not saying that this thing was done somewhere else. It's itself telling you exactly what's later claimed.
Do you assign printed publication stronger as an invalidating ground than being on sale?
Oh, I'm not necessarily choosing which one is stronger. I was just answering that first because that was what Arthur had in mind.
So you see, just to finish that point, the concentrations disclosed here with respect to print publications are sufficient for enablement purposes?
Yes, Your Honor, and the
what
point...
What about the point the opposing counsel made?
The opposing counsel's point had a lot to do with hypothetical situations where you've got to make a new chemical compound or you've got some trade secret being practiced and you can't tell what's going on from the publication. That's not the case here. This is not some complicated trade secret. It's not a new compound that nobody knew how to synthesize. All you had to do, the only step in this method, is you administer this composition. Exactly that composition is given, and it was administered. Now, back to your point about what has to be enabled.
Go back to Judge Rory's point. Okay. That's the first question, and that was with respect to the hearsay regarding on sale.
Right. I do want to answer hearsay about on sale, and I wanted to come back to the question about enablement. And what's claimed here. On the on sale bar, I think the key to understanding that is what you already said. Did we make a prima facie case? There would be lots of ways to prove something was on sale. You know, you can put in lots of different evidence, but the amount of evidence you put in of whether something was on sale is different from the fact of whether or not it was on sale. We could bring in somebody to testify. Yes, I went into a store and I laid down this money and I got this back. And I took the product and
it's on sale.
That would be an actual sale.
Or yeah, and since you have a product, here we rely exclusively on this advertisement and don't cross the line towards an admissible hearsay. If we're having to identify sort of the truth of the existence of this product and characterize it the way it's characterized.
No, Your Honor, because it's really not hearsay. The advertisement is saying that this is on sale and it is circumstantial evidence of sale. Not all circumstantial evidence is hearsay. We're not really offering it for the truth of the matters asserted. What we're offering is that, look, there were two other people who were out there, and there are actually more than that. There were several others who were out there before the priority date of this application saying, here, take this that's got the same composition, and it'll make you stronger and it'll improve your recovery.
They're saying ipso facto it's an on-sale bar because it says it's on sale.
Your Honor,
irrespective of whether they could deliver, irrespective of whether it was in the stores?
No, Your Honor, I'm not going that far. It was circumstantial evidence, and circumstantial evidence is sufficient, but could have been rebutted. If this were not a real product, if they had come in with any evidence saying that, well, yeah, that was advertised, but they were never able to ship, this was never out there, then that would have rebutted our prima facie case, and summary judgment would have been improper. And that would raise the question of fact. They didn't come in with that evidence. All they came in with was evidence saying, you know, sometimes advertisements aren't true. Sometimes people make claims in advertisements that they can't back up. Well, that does not create a genuine issue of material fact. That doesn't rebut our evidence that, well, this product was out there. These advertisements are evidence. They make it more likely that the product was on sale. They're relevant to that point. Maybe they could have rebutted it. Maybe they... Theoretically, there might have been evidence that somebody could have come forward with to rebut it, but they didn't. And part of the reason they didn't is because it really was on sale. There wasn't any evidence that they could come up with. If they had developed that evidence, the evidence would have just shown that, yes, it actually was.
In other words, they could have rebutted it if they'd gone to, was it GNC or one of those stores and found they couldn't get it?
If they'd gone to one of those stores, if they'd gone to the people selling it and done a 30B6 deposition, they said, no, we put out these advertisements, but... we just weren't able to do it. Yes, that kind of evidence would have raised a genuine issue of material fact. That kind of evidence is not present in this case. So yes, you could sometimes overcome this. It's not that you're automatically going to win just because you have an advertisement. But when the advertisement is the only actual evidence, then and the advertisement is unrebutted as this was.
What about the fact that the advertisement was not the patentee's advertisement? It was a third party's.
I think that makes it stronger. If it were the patentee's advertisement, then there might be a question whether they have put enablement in there. If it were the patentee's advertisement, then they could come in with evidence about whether it was on sale or not on sale. But here, you know, the suggestion is, well, maybe these guys were just making this up. Maybe they weren't really doing that. That really begs the question, though, of what it is these people invented. What was claimed here? What they claimed is that if you combine these two chemicals in a composition, you take that, it'll help you in your bodybuilding. It'll make you stronger, it'll aid in recovery.
What if someone puts out an ad 6 months in advance of the availability of the product? Is that an on sale bottle?
No, it wouldn't be. If somebody could prove that it was 6 months in advance or if that was shown in the product, it's not the case here.
It was on its face. If it said available in 6 months, on its face, that wouldn't be.
Yes, that would mean that it's on sale in 6 months. And here we know that's not the case because we've got the coupon there that has an expiration date on the coupon, which is earlier than that. So we know it was already out there on sale. I do, and I'm trying to transition to that with this idea of what it was that they claimed here. If these advertisers were making up this claim, if they really weren't able to do all of this, how could they have known to tell that lie? The only thing that's claimed here is that if you administer this combination, it makes you stronger and it aids your recovery. How would the advertisers have known to claim that before it had even been invented?
Do you maintain that for an on-sale bar, enablement isn't necessary as it would be for a printed publication?
Your Honor, there might be
circumstances. It's on sale.
There might be circumstances where something that was on sale was not enabled. Or if the claim has other limitations.
That would be a reputation of it being on sale.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That would be a reputation of it being on sale.
It really would be. That would prove that the invention wasn't on sale, that something else was on sale. Now here, the critical point on enabling, I think, is understanding this preamble language. And I've only got a minute and a half left, so let's just assume that it is the limitation, okay? That's not really a question here, because the point is that they didn't include the specific ratios and percentages, whatever else they may now want to suggest was required in the claim. If that was their invention, if some particular ratio or percentage was their invention, if that's what's required in order to make this stuff work, then the claim has to lay that out. You can't claim that sort of thing implicitly using functional language. That's not proper claim drafting practice. The fact that they put this statement in the preamble was an admission by the patentee that this is not the key to the invention. This is not critical to the invention.
The court says this isn't suitable for summary judgment. There were points made that refuted the claim of being on sale and that you need to try.
Yes, Your Honor, that's what they said.
Yeah, and what's your...
There was no reputation that was on sale. You know, you've got a statement from the expert that...
Reputation that what was being offered might not have had the components of the claim.
There was absolutely no evidence that it didn't have what's listed there. There's no reason to believe that it didn't have what's listed there. I mean, what are we saying has to happen here? That we have to bring in a jury and say and present this evidence to them? If you gave this evidence to a jury, there's no other conclusion anybody could reach but that it was on sale, because there is no contrary evidence. They didn't meet their burden in responding to summary judgment to introduce any contrary evidence. And really the reason they didn't, it's not a reflection on counsel, because there was no contrary evidence. You really couldn't refute that, because even though the evidence may be circumstantial, that's all you had here. Did I answer your question about enablement? Thank you, Erica.
May it please the court, my name is Robert Latham and I represent the Medical Research Institute. I'd like to address Judge Lori's question about the on-sale bar, make a few comments about the hearsay issue, and then address enablement briefly. To answer Judge Lori's question, the offer for sale does not implicate hearsay objection. It is a verbal act that did not go to the truth of the matter asserted. For instance, the ads are not being offered for the truth of the fact that a bodybuilder, Lou Ferrigno, thinks he's the greatest products that ever existed. They are being offered to show that they were on sale. You have other indicia of that, the coupon, the price, where you can get it. So it really doesn't implicate hearsay at all.
Doesn't it implicate what was actually on sale? Do we have to accept as true the content of the advertisement?
Well, it's certainly a prima facie case of what is on sale. And as I said, it's not hearsay. Even if it were hearsay, the only, it wasn't really by way of objection, but the only issue that was raised by IOVATE in the court below was on page 1751 and 1752 of the record in response to BSN's motion for summary judgment. And all they raised an issue with was some of the testimonials in the prior art ads. Two of four testimonials in the Twin Labs ad, and only four of 22 testimonials in the Weider Professional Product ad. So there was no hearsay objection, nor hearsay issue raised by anything else. Yes, that was related. That didn't relate to the motion for summary judgment. That related to when we're getting towards trial. So that was later. But again, the offer for sale, and I think Judge Lori had the distinction between what was on sale and what was sold. For on sale, the hearsay implication is not implicated. And as counsel for BSN said, this is a prima facie case that these are on sale. There was no evidence offered to rebut the fact that they were on sale. They had all the addition to be on sale. They were intended to be bound. You had the coupon you could take. If they wanted to contest that, they could try to show that the coupon wasn't used. And there was absolutely no counter evidence to that whatsoever. So we think the on-sale bar is a very, very compelling ground for summary judgment. And the on-sale bar doesn't implicate the enablement issue at all. And the lower court cited the Zenith case for that proposition. I'd like to move on to enablement. And Judge Prost's question about the issue of does the fact that the ads didn't have any specific mix of ingredients or specific ratios, whether that in any way implicates the enablement issue. And my answer to that would be that it does not, because the patent itself at column 8, lines 54 to 61, says that effective dosage ratios and concentration components can all be readily ascertained by a person of skill in the art. So there is no requirement that there be a specific dosage, a specific combination of components. I do want to address one thing that they have talked about, which is an affidavit from our expert, Dr. Wolf, who talked about one of skill in the art not being able that there be undue experimentation required for one of skill in the art to try to test all of the combinations that might result from all of the keto acids and all of the amino acids that come within the scope of the patent. And I think they've treated Dr. Wolf's declaration in a very misleading way, because they've taken that statement and made it appear that a person of skill in the art couldn't take an isolated set of ingredients that has these amino acids and these keto acids and practice the invention. What Dr. Wolf said is you have 100 amino acids, you've got 1,000 keto acids, and in combination, it would take undue experimentation to enable a patent by having to test all of them.
Now, there are a lot of claims here, dependent claims, citing specific compounds.
Right.
The court purported to treat them all, applying the claims to the publication the ads. Is that all done correctly?
Yes, it was. In fact, there's absolutely no dispute that the other claims that add a certain ingredient, that those ingredients were found in those ads.
Now, one more question. There were two patents here.
Yes.
Summary judgment was denied for the other patent. What happened to that?
It's been dismissed. The issue with regard to MRI has been dismissed, so the 189 patent is not an issue of this year. So my time's up. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. On the issue of hearsay, counsel for MRI made a statement to the effect they're not offering the answer to the truth of what was in the bottle, but that is, in fact, is exactly what they're being offered for. And this is not a publication in Science or Nature or PNAS where an author reports, I bought compound X out of the Sigma catalog. That would be very good evidence.
That would be a sale.
Yes. Well, correct. Or even if Sigma donated it to me. But that would be very good evidence of what was in a bottle in public use or on sale or offered for sale. That is not the facts that we have here.
If we don't agree with you on this point, do any of your claims survive because the claims and the ads match with respect to specific?
There's one claim, which is Claim 8, which calls for conjugation, which has to be looked at separately. And it gets to the question of what was proven. The ads refer to ornithine alkylglutarate. That is a conjugate when it's named, but again, that is not proof that what was in a bottle was a conjugate and not a mixture. There was, and I want to briefly address, there's been a lot of discussion of prima facie case, but that's not really what this is about. This is proving invalidity by clear and convincing evidence beyond any genuine question of material fact. And if a challenger is relying on
isn't summary judgment suitable if there's a prima facie case that isn't refuted?
It depends what Your Honor means by a prima facie case. I would say it's a case that you could put it in front of the jury and win on it. And that's not what we have here. If I'm trying to prove up invalidity by a third-party activity, I better go get discovery from that third-party activity. I've spent a lot of time in my career trying to do that. It's not the patentee's obligation to seek out the third party and disprove an allegation by the challenger that activity occurred. My time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.